What's up, Brainiacs? Hope you're enjoying the podcast. Just a programming note that every Monday at 9 Central, you can join me, Andrew Cieslak, and Josh Custodio for Monday Night Program. Come hang out with us as we continue to build the WBCW universe using Fire Pro Wrestling Promoter Mode. Who should we sign? What matches should we book? Join us for the only professional wrestling program on Monday nights. That's Monday Night Program on twitch.tv/wrestlingbrain.
Comics in the combat zone, comics in the combat zone. Usually we make you laugh, but now we're watching guys get stabbed with light tubes.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to Comics in the Combat Zone. This week, talking about CZW Payback, which happened April 4th, 2001 in Dover, Delaware at Froggy's Bar and Grill. I love being back at Froggy's. I don't know about you, Ben.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I was very excited. One of the opening lines, and it's probably my favorite line from all CZW, is to go, ready for like a night of retribution and violence here at Froggy's Bar and Grill. And I was just like, I am so stoked for a night of retribution.
Well, and hey, right off the top, something that's been stolen from CZW, the name Payback. Was a WWE pay-per-view in like 2013, 14.
Oh, right. Yeah, they've been digging through. I can't wait till they do like March Violence in March or whatever it was called.
Or WWE. They said it couldn't be done.
Yeah, WWE Station War at Station 44. Right. Whoa, this is really specific.
Yeah. So, no, I love Froggy's. It is a great venue, and we get that same great production that we had in the last show. So, but we begin the show with John Hitman House, our resident...
John Hitman House.
The resident commentator in the parking lot. He's trying to interview the wife beater and Smack Mac as they're getting out of the car. And it feels like they didn't warn these guys that this guy was going to be doing this.
Well, yeah, because I think it's the first time I've ever seen wife beater with a full shirt on.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this? This is disgusting. It's also, Max voice is like even more comical in a way. Like
it's
sounds
not garbled
different.
And fucked up like it normally is.
No, but it's still kind of like this is a cartoon man's voice.
Yeah.
And they're driving like what appears to be like a Cadillac. Like something I imagine Elvis would drive. Like how did he afford this?
Well, and they're asking, so they're trying to build this controversy, like maybe Justice Payne won't be here because these are our tag team champions. And they're like, where is Justice Payne? And Max like, he's going to be here. He'll be here. But I also have to note, Hitman House is wearing this leather jacket. It's like the Taj Mahal. And I looked it up. It's a casino.
Nice.
It's like
That's
a leather
it.
Casino jacket.
That's so perfect.
And he also has like a crucifix necklace. So I just feel like with his outfit alone, we learned a lot about John Hitman House.
More than I'd want to know.
And then we cut, and we're back to the commentators, who we just saw. So it's Eric Gargiulo and John Hitman House. They're opening up the show, running down the card in Froggy's Bar and Grill. And then we cut again, and we go to the ring announcer as Mother by Danzig begins playing. Are you
banger.
Aware of this song?
Yeah, it's a banger.
Yeah, it is a banger. I wonder if that's where Zandig got his name.
Danzig, yeah, I'm almost certain.
Zandig, he's just like, I'll just switch him around.
Yeah, I think so. I think he was, you know, flying a bit too close to the sun playing a Danzig song, I'm sure, without their knowledge.
Yeah, and this song, Mother, is the entrance music for the one and only Jeff Rocker as he enters, giving the middle finger to everybody. I thought he was going to come out with Rockin' Rebel. No Rockin' Rebel to be seen on this show.
No, thank God.
Thank God. I feel like every show that he's not on might be the last time we ever see him. So I hope so.
Yeah, for sure. I was very excited to see my favorite singles wrestler, Jeff Rocker.
Jeff Rocker. Not Rockin' Rebel. And then next out, Eddie Valentine enters to Killing in the Name Of, which I only know both these songs because of Guitar Hero.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Danzig, yeah.
I'd never heard of Mother until Guitar Hero, and I've never heard of Killing in the Name Of until Guitar Hero.
Yeah, I mean, they're both bangers. Mother's, to be fair, probably did hear in Guitar Hero. Killing the Name Of, though, that's a Stone Cold classic.
I know, I just don't like... What's the band's name?
Danzig?
Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah, Rage Against the Machine.
I don't. It doesn't like the guy's voice.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll say it.
That's controversial. Hot take.
I don't like that band.
We endorse Giorgio Moroder, but not Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah. So that is our first match. We get Fast Eddie Valentine versus Jeff Rocker. And Fast Eddie is accompanied by, of course, John Dahmer. So it technically is like a John Dahmer opener. Yes. Were you excited for this match, by the way?
No.
The colliding of this terrible faction?
Yeah, the two titans. Maybe Jeff Rocker just absorbed Rockin' Rebel.
They became one.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then, you know, we know what happened with Rockin' Rebel.
Yeah.
They start with grapples, and it's weird because they're doing these grapples. They look good but shitty at the same time. Like, Rocker is able to do that matrix spot where it's around the waist and he just fucking matrixes to his feet. And I was like, it looked the most athletic Jeff Rocker's ever looked. But then they go into a pinfall off and it looks like super choreographed. It looks like these guys were doing this in an empty bar.
Yeah.
Together.
And they weren't. Everyone was there for a night of retribution at Froggy's Bar and Grill.
They were all super into it. Rocker got the advantage with a Northern Light suplex and then an overhead Beal. But then Eddie comes back with a shoulder block, but then he's caught into a Boston Crab. That was the most convoluted spot of this match, maybe. Like, Eddie runs towards him and Rocker, like, rolls him up into a Boston Crab.
Yeah.
And they do, like, the rope break spot, which never makes sense in CZW because, like, it's the only time the referee is paying attention to the rules.
Yeah.
Eddie counters. He hits a rolling neck breaker and then two fisherman busters for a two count. And then he follows with this awesome palm strike. I know it's like he got it from a Japanese wrestler. I forget the guy's name. But the running fucking palm
strike
to the face. It did look awesome. And you can tell he just actually smoked him. Like,
yeah, it would hurt. Jeff Rocker's got powerful palms.
No, this was Eddie.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It wouldn't hurt because Eddie looks like...
Yeah, he's weak then.
Yeah. But then Rocker counters an elbow and a side suplex. He hits rolling suplexes, which are like... John Dahmer taught him that, and now he's using it against Eddie Valentine, which I thought was funny. And then he just hurls him over the top rope into the fans, and you can tell, like, Eddie decided to just take this.
Yeah.
Like, he just threw himself over the top rope and beeled into some fans' feet. And then Jeff Rocker climbs to the top rope and hits this, like, awful flying clothesline. I guess channeling Rockin' Rebel. Who's never hit a good move off the top.
That's where he's gone. He's gone to practice. He's flown to the Himalayas to practice his flying clothesline.
It just looked awful. Well, and it's weird. If you remember our last show at Froggy's Bar and Grill, there's like two sides of the ring do have like a fall off after, but there's also two other sides that have this weird platform. So when you get thrown over the top, you're still level with the ring.
Yeah, so it looks a bit... It doesn't look
weird.
Great. Yeah,
it's a good setup for a bar, but it's just sort of weird. Like the setup is very strange. I'd be surprised how many people could like fit in this bar. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean it's a better setup at a bar they've performed that twice than where's the Sewell, New Jersey, where they've performed countless times.
The Champs Soccer Arena.
Yeah.
So we go back in ring, and Rocker climbs to the top, but he's hung up for an alley oop by Eddie, who throws him over his head. Followed by a top rope leg drop to the back of Rocker's head. Eddie keeps going with a Yakuza kick, and then he's reversed into a Rocker belly-to-belly. And at this point, I'm like, is this a good match? Like, I'm not totally sure how I feel about it. And then Rocker, out of nowhere, just gets Fast Eddie on his shoulders, hits a standing TKO for a clean pin at 9 minutes and 44 seconds. Do you think the right guy went over here, Ben?
I mean, the right guy would be both disqualified, I think. I mean, I'm similar to you where I'm like, objectively, it was okay. Probably the best match they've both had.
Yeah.
But I didn't, I wasn't particularly enthused or whatever, but it didn't feel too long. And I was like, okay, like, that's fine.
I know when I'm tapping my wrist, even though I don't have a watch, I'm like, this match is a bit long.
Yeah.
9 minutes for these guys. 9 minutes, 44, almost 10 minutes. But yeah, it's sort of, it is weird. It does feel like, and I'm not calling for Rockin' Rebel, but it does feel like he was meant to be here and then wasn't.
Oh, because it probably would have been a tag team match.
Or something. No, I mean, John Dahmer has a match later, but it just feels like they set something up last week and then he just wasn't here.
Yeah.
And also Jeff Rocker wasn't dressed like Rockin' Rebel, so I don't know.
Maybe he's in Japan Rockin' Rebel. He's doing it all.
And so Dahmer, he pulls Eddie out of the ring and puts him over his shoulders like a fireman carry, and they just leave, and the match cuts. So we'll continue this feud, I guess. And we're back with Johnny Cashmere in his Hot Topic apparel. His opponent is Z-Bar, who enters to Trent Acid's music, which is still the best music in pro wrestling at this point.
Yeah, for sure. But I think he comes out with Trent Acid as well. But you get to hear the banger, that song, many times this episode.
Yeah.
Trent Acid comes in and out a lot.
Yeah, and they do seem like good pals. Like, you can tell these guys probably smoke crack together or something, because they're just good buddies.
Yeah, they're buddies, yeah.
And
guys being dudes.
Guys being dudes. And it's funny, because they tease Acid versus Cashmere. Like, Acid's like, you want to face me? I'll face you. And then, because of the graphic that spoiled it at the beginning, we know Z-Bar is going to step in. So they already sort of spoiled the lead. So we get Johnny Cashmere versus Z-Bar. How do you say it? Do you say Z-Bar or Z-Bar?
Z-Bar. Z-Bar. I say it separately. Z-Bar.
Yeah.
Z-Bar.
Z-Bar. So, yeah. Acid said Delaware isn't worthy to see them wrestle, which he's probably right.
He's not wrong. Yeah, I think that deserves a better place, like New Jersey, maybe.
This is a match exclusively for New Jersey.
Yeah.
And then Z-Bar attacks Cashmere from behind, and Cashmere just no-sells it and starts just beating the shit out of Z-Bar. He like, literally, it looks like he's punching him in the face as hard as he can. Then
yeah.
He hits a bulldog, and then it's a submission I couldn't really describe. He's doing, like, I thought it was a bow and arrow, but the commentary describes it as an Oriental Scorpion submission.
Yeah, I think they changed that name at some point from the Oriental Scorpion submission. The commentators are going psycho mode with Cashmere. They're like, he's going to kill it. Cashmere's going to kill this boy. He's going to murder him. I can't believe they're doing this. I was like, Cashmere's not that hard. Like, he's not that cool. I am glad, though, it appears the nickname that they used a lot appears to have gone. Like, even Hitman is calling him Cashmere.
Yeah,
that nickname, which is great by me. That's absolutely fine by me. But
you're referring to Cash Queer.
Yeah, I was. And yeah, I'm glad they're not saying it anymore. But they are just like being like, who is this guy that you're talking about? Where Cashmere's like, Cashmere's gonna kill his entire family. He's gonna kill him so hard, his entire family are gonna die.
I was telling you last show, like, I'm sure he watched the tape back and was like, you gotta stop saying Cash Queer. Like, it's just too awkward. Like, it was so constant on the last one.
Yeah, I don't know. The last one wasn't at Froggy. Maybe there's different rules at Froggy's. maybe there is some more rules and it helps.
But the submission has Cashmere's sort of body exposed. Like, it's like a snap mirror sort of hold. And Trent Acid just enters the ring with a chair and hits Johnny Cashmere in the midsection as hard as he can, which looks awesome. But it's just like, the referee's just like, I guess we're allowing this.
Yeah, rope breaks, no chance. I draw the line at breaking, at not following the rules with a rope break. But you go ahead with the chair, mate.
Yeah, a secondary guy. And this allows Z-Bar to get the advantage just with basic offense. Like, I'm wondering if he's in training or whatever, because they also mentioned the knee surgery he had, and they're like, he's not even meant to wrestle. And I'm like, this guy, he looks awful.
Knee bar.
There you go. And just as Cashmere gets control again, Acid just comes up on the apron and hits him from behind and then throws powder in Cashmere's eyes. So it's like basically a handicap match. And even after that, Cashmere still takes over immediately. He hits a suplex, a shoulder breaker, and then Acid breaks up the pinfall with just a top rope chair drop, like Sabu style. He just comes off the top, dropping a chair on Cashmere.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of not wrong in that I don't think Z-Bar knows how to wrestle particularly well, because Cashmere is definitely leading a lot of it.
For sure. Well, and any time that it's just them in the ring, Cashmere just takes over. But then they go to double suplex Cashmere to the outside, but he blocks one of them, knocks both of them off the apron, but when he tries to suplex Bar back in the ring, Acid just grabs his foot and holds it as Z-Bar sort of cross-bodies him. It's a weird wrestling spot I've never understood. Like, if someone's holding your legs, you can't kick out with your shoulders.
Yeah.
And that's what happened here. So Z-Bar wins at 2 minutes and 51 seconds. Just a weird, terrible match.
Very weird. It felt longer than 2 minutes and 51 seconds, for sure.
Felt like the whole three, if you
ask
me.
Yeah, yeah. Rounding up.
Yeah, so Cashmere loses it. He starts attacking the referee. And he grabs a microphone. He says, him and Acid took over the indies, but they've never feuded together. And he promises to kick their asses.
It's weird. That's bad promo work to use the word feud, I feel like.
I think so, too.
I think it's, like, poor thought. Like, yeah, we've done everything together except feud. And you're like, that's no one says that. That's not a real sentence that anyone says. You never, like, if someone's like, oh, you're having an argument with your mate, you're not like, yeah, I'm feuding with them right now. It's like, that's not a normal sentence to say. It only works in, it's a wrestling term. Don't use it in the ring, though.
That's true.
Yeah.
Even though, as a comedian, I have a few feuds going on.
Yeah,
I would never describe it as a feud.
Yeah. Also, as, you know, an alcoholic, you have a lot of feuds going on.
Yeah, the bartender.
Yeah.
Rip me off. So then we cut, and then the first thing we hear is that same music. Giorgio Moroder.
Is that how you pronounce it? Sorry, I've been saying it wrong.
I don't know. I'm probably pronouncing it
wrong.
Well,
I hope you don't listen to this now and gets offended.
He's probably dead.
Is he dead?
Don't you think?
I don't think he's dead. You carry on. I'll Google it.
All right. So the first thing we hear is that beautiful song. And then next out is to much shittier electronic music, Nick Burke. And then finally, the third person out is Reckless Youth to finish this triple threat.
Still alive. 83 years old.
Oh.
We could get him on the pod.
No way. You think so?
Yeah, I'm calling out. I'm feuding with Giorgio Moroder.
What's the opposite of a feud? Like, oh, I'm in love with?
Yeah, I'm in love with this guy. Yeah, and I want him on the podcast.
That would be so sick.
Did you know
Trent Acid was using your song?
Yeah.
He's like probably owed money.
Yeah, he'd be like, I knew. I love Trent Acid.
So this is a triple threat match between Trent Acid, Reckless Youth, and Nick Burke, and they announced that Trent Acid won the coin toss to start the match and gets a 5-minute bye just outside as the two other wrestlers.
How do you do a coin toss in a triple threat?
That's what I have written here.
Yeah.
How do you do that? It's just, they just said it.
Yeah.
Like a rock, paper, scissors would make sense.
They literally right there is the thingy. Yeah, it's like, yeah. He won this 50-50 in this. That's Scott Steiner maths, or what is it? Steiner did
Scott
that.
Steiner,
yeah, that's good. Yeah. If I flip the coin three times, but that you've got one chance to get heads, but if you take my two chances to get, yeah, it's just absolutely crazy.
Just so stupid, not thought out. And also, Reckless Youth and Nick Burke are the baby faces here, so they should have just been like, well, we're just going to stand here for 5 minutes until Trent Acid has to get in. But they just start wrestling each other. Yeah, this is such a stupid way to start this match. They have a reverse off, of course. And the commentary even asks here, what happens if one of them wins before 5 minutes is over?
Yeah.
And the other one's like, I don't know.
Let's find out. Yeah.
I guess Trent Acid loses. Not that this match means anything. Reckless Youth locks in a Cobra Clutch, which I thought was pretty old school. And then they go back to, like, arm-based reversals. I'm sure that Nick Burke has this arm, like, because it's been the past three or four shows where it's just arm locks, arm breakers, arm-based moves.
Yeah.
And at one point, Burke he's getting hip tossed, and he just lands beautifully on his feet. So I'm like, it just feels like this guy's getting into gymnastics.
Reckless Youth, like, was he at this point pretty big in the indies, or did he go on to be?
I don't know. No, I don't think he ever like got past this point. I know he wrestled a lot with Chikara.
Okay.
With Mike Quackenbush, who
right.
we haven't seen since like episode 3 or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, Reckless Youth was always an indie darling.
Yeah.
But never signed. As far as I'm aware.
Yeah, because the commentators as well are also like, you know, Nick Burke's got his problems, but there's one thing you can't deny. He's one of the most technically proficient wrestlers in the company. And I'm like, well, yeah, technically you're probably right, but also it's like a very low bar.
Well, and they constantly refer to him as former CCW heavyweight champion Nick Burke.
Yeah.
And I'm like, he held it for like 5 minutes.
Oh,
like,
yeah, he literally. Yeah, yeah, he didn't. Yeah, that's an insane thing to do.
It's like a technicality. Anyway, so Acid sneaks in at 3 minutes into this match, and he attacks Burke from behind. And right away, the two baby faces just start double-teaming Acid. Burke gets both of them outside and teases the dive, but just fails. Like, he goes for it and just fucking, like, his foot gets caught up on something, and just he bails so hard. Then Acid goes to springboard over the top, but Reckless Youth follows him and tackles him off the top rope. It was a good spot. Burke clotheslines Reckless Youth off the top rope, and then finally Acid Yakuza kicks Burke. At this point, the pace is going, like, pretty hot and heavy.
Mm.
What do I have written here? Yeah, pace is super fast. Reckless Use hits a nice death drop on Burke and then a running double knees to Acid. Burke tries to back suplex Reckless Youth, blocked, and then Acid double suplexes both of them for a triple down. Again, like, this match got really good here at this point. I thought when Acid took part in it, it became, like, you know, better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, for sure, definitely. I mean, Reckless Youth's a pretty good wrestler. Trent
all three,
Acid.
All three of these guys are, like, in the maybe top, you know, the top
of all time of goats. They're the three goats
of CZW right now.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Trent Acid's probably number one, and then
you think so? You think he's the best wrestler in this company?
Probably not the best wrestler, but the best full package, I would say.
Yeah, I agree.
Best wrestler. I mean, Rick Blade's probably up there in terms of just pure skill.
Except
Rick
no Blade, charisma, though. I would say maybe Nick Mondo.
Yeah, I was going to say Nick Mondo. But Mondo at this point isn't... People just love him, like, but he also doesn't have a lot to him either. He's just a very good wrestler at the moment, willing to take bumps.
Just a legend.
Yeah, maybe Lobo. Maybe we should put Lobo up there. He's after his showing coming up.
I don't put Lobo anywhere near the top. Yeah. But so all three guys are trying their finishers. They all reverse each other's finishers. It leads to an assisted sunset German bomb to Trent Acid, which was just like, I'm sure the first time I saw this move, it blew my mind. And then I realized it's 2001. I'm like, these guys are being really creative with their spots.
Mm.
Reckless Youth just smokes Acid with a lariat, and then he gets right back up and just hits him even harder with it makes Acid do a moonsault for a two count. And then Acid with Reckless Youth has him on top, and Burke gets him on the shoulders, and Reckless Youth hits a doomsday bulldog spot. Burke then just throws Reckless Youth out of the ring, and Acid just schoolboys him with his legs on the rope and gets the win at 10 minutes and 53 seconds. So they're keeping Acid strong, and it sort of makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, you have to. He's the rising star of the company for sure.
And I like that he has his foot on the ropes, and they're like, the commentators are freaking out, like, that's illegal. He shouldn't do that. And I'm like,
yeah.
We've just seen these guys use, like, weapons. And
when the commentators care is interesting. But, yeah, I thought, like you said, it got better as it went on. And by the end, I was thoroughly into it.
Yeah. All of the matches on this show, like, none of them go that long, and it almost feels like it's like if CZW had their own Monday Night Raw, like, this would be sort of the thing, because it feels like... They didn't give you too much, but then you're sort of into it by the end, and then it just cuts.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, if these are at the weekend, a lot of these wrestlers are feeling Monday night sore.
There we go. And yeah, so Acid leaves, and both the baby faces leave dejected, and you hear the announcer right before the camera cuts being like, we're going to take a 5-minute intermission.
5 minutes is not enough time to do anything, yeah. Especially with that much... Like, the amount of people who are now going to the toilet, it's like, 5 minutes is... Like, what are you going to do in 5 minutes?
I'm sure it was closer to 10 minutes.
Yeah, you'd hope so. Because that 5 minutes... Because I ran out, I paused it and came back, and it took me 6 minutes, and I didn't have anyone else at my house.
Yeah. I also pissed hard during the Yeah. So we get our cut, and then we come back, and out next is John Dahmer, accompanied by Eddie Valentine. And the commentary is saying, like, he's challenging for the Iron Man title tonight. And if he wins, he wants to make every single Iron Man title match 60-minute time limit. And I was like, if we ever get a 60-minute time limit match by John Dahmer, I'm quitting the podcast.
Him and Daniel Bryan. Bryan Danielson. I can't remember which one it is. But, yeah, that would be...
Both.
Yeah, okay, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I
wouldn't... It's weird I'm saying that, but I would love to see John Dahmer
try and last.
Bryan Danielson.
Yeah, how incredible. Yeah, it would be so funny to put some of these wrestlers with just some of the more, like, just put the Kingpins against the Young Bucks and see how on earth, or like the, you know,
or
just...
Lobo versus Mick Foley.
Oh, man, they'd die. They'd surely both die.
They would both die.
Yeah.
So, speaking of which, Lobo enters with his belt. And it's funny because he does the Sandman thing where it's clear, like, there's a clear path to the ring, but he decides to go around the bar and climbs up onto the bar top and holds his title up.
Yeah.
And everyone is sort of going wild for him. You can tell he's, like, drinking it in.
And yeah, he's on the top of Z-Bar.
And you can tell as he's entering the ring, John Dahmer gets a microphone, and he says, Iron Man is about wrestling, not hardcore shit. I taught him to wrestle, but I didn't teach him about respect.
I mean...
How did this promo land with you?
Given it was Dahmer, I was like, that's not a bad pro. I thought it was all right.
I didn't think it was that bad either.
Yeah, I thought it was. I thought it was okay. I was like, this promo, because it makes sense. He's right. Like we've said the entire time, we've been like, Lobo's just there to get abused and get hit, and like he's not wrong. Iron Man matches are not about like getting blood, like super bloody or whatever. It's about actual wrestling. So I was like, holy shit, like, yeah, fair play, mate. Like,
John Dahmer, not... thin John Dahmer here.
Yeah, I know. He's, I mean, he's not, he looks like a bully from Power Rangers. Like, he, he's not thin. I don't think he's thin, but he definitely looks a bit better.
Thin compared to earlier John Dahmer.
Yeah, potentially.
He's thinner.
Yeah, true. Yeah, maybe he's thinning out. Yeah.
It's like the Stephen King book. a gypsy has cursed him.
Yeah.
So they start in control. Dahmer starts in control with holds. He shoulder blocks Lobo. And then Lobo hits a neck breaker. And he's like, that's a fucking neck breaker. And then he locks in an arm bar. And he's like, this is an arm bar. Like, he's teaching.
Yeah, he knows the moves. Yeah.
And he continues with, like, arm drags, hip tosses. Dahmer counters all out of nowhere with a back suplex and then a gourd buster. I'm saying this like it's a good match. I thought all of this was, like, really sloppy. Just, like, not... It didn't look good.
Yeah, no, I mean, I didn't hate it as I normally, you know, maybe the high of Dahmer doing a good promo carried me through.
Yeah,
I didn't hate it, but they just don't look like wrestlers. They don't, like...
It looks like if you and I were to try out a match.
Yeah, like Mick Foley, obviously incredible at hardcore matches and things like that, but if he was in the ring with, like, trying to wrestle, it just wouldn't work. Like maybe he was against... Brian Danielson or something like that. Like, they could put on a good match, but if he was trying to do the technical stuff, and these guys are trying to do the technical stuff without looking like wrestlers, and it just doesn't... Also, don't cancel this podcast. I don't want comments being like, actually, Mick Foley, he ruled as a technical wrestler.
Even Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, he's great. You know what I'm saying? Like, they just... It does just look like two brothers who are practicing in their bedroom. They're doing moves on the bed and stuff. Like, it's not...
Because they're both dressed like slobs too, and like they don't have any look to them at all. You're completely right. I mean, yeah. At one point, Dahmer, I'm like, oh, he's gonna hit the patented spine buster, and they nearly botch it. Like it's almost like he loses Lobo while he's holding
his
him.
One move. Yeah. Yeah.
So he like whiplashes Lobo's head against the ground, gets a two count, and yeah, I have written here super sloppy, super shitty. Lobo manages to pick up John Dahmer for a Death Valley driver for a two count. Then Dahmer locks in a sleeper lock. And this was like, I couldn't believe it. You can tell for some reason, like Lobo last week, I believe, did the Stone Cold Steve Austin Bret Hart finish from WrestleMania 13. This time he went for the Roddy Piper Bret Hart finish, I believe from WrestleMania 8, but it could be 7. And so Dahmer has him in a sleeper hold, and he goes to climb up the turnbuckle and flip over and pin.
Yeah.
But he doesn't get his legs over his head and cradle it, so he's just lying on top of Dahmer, like sloppy missionary position. And the ref counts 3 anyway, and Lobo gets the win here at 4 minutes and 28 seconds. I have written here, ugly, bad match. I had not high expectations, but higher than what this was. I was like, what was this? Like, why didn't they use weapons?
Yeah, they should have. Maybe Iron Man matches should be... Like, Lobo shouldn't be the Iron Man champion, basically. Dahmer is not wrong. I stand with Dahmer on that fact. But yeah, this was not a good match.
And then even the post-match. So Lobo's celebrating with his title in the ring. And Dahmer rips it out of his hands and then just gives it back to him and shakes his hand. And like, it was just done so poorly.
Like, yeah, it is weird. Like, just shake his hand.
Yeah.
Just do that bit. If you're going to do the respect, and then Lobo like, oh, am I going to hit him with the title? And then it's like, no. And I'm like, to be fair, that's good, because I don't need to see any more of these two.
Well, this is what a champion would do if they're losing their belt. They're like, no, this is still my belt.
Yeah.
No, it's your belt. But it's like, no, Dahmer never won this title. Like,
no.
It didn't make sense at all. And then, yeah, Lobo gets on the microphone afterwards, and he's like, this belt is what I make it. So next time, you're going to bleed like a stuck pig. And so I do think they're going to fight in a death match next week.
Yeah.
And it must be, it will be better than this match, I would assume.
You'd hope so. You know, maybe there's going to be another night of retribution at Froggy's Bar and Grill next week.
Payback.
Yeah. A night full of payback at Froggy's Bar and Grill.
So we get our hard cut. And then out next are the Briscoes with the Dew. And they're looking as identical as ever. I cannot tell these Briscoes apart.
No.
Very strange. And then their opponents, Rick Blade and Ruckus, they're introduced together, and they come out to Rick Blade's, like, shitty music. Were you at all excited for this match? Because I feel like these are four of the best wrestlers in the company.
Yeah, I mean, I always look forward to seeing Rick Blade and things like that. So I was interested to see how he'd work with Ruckus. I mean, like, because Rick Blade is really good, and I'll, you know, but I just, like you said, he's got no charisma. I don't, like, particularly love watching him or anything like that. Like, he's, you know, he's a good wrestler, but, you know, I'd rather watch Trent Acid or Nick Mondo or something. But Ruckus, I like seeing him do backflips, so.
Yeah, I'm sort of the same with these guys. They do have, like, really heated reverse-offs, which you would expect. I think it begins with Mark and Ruckus doing a reverse-off, and then they tag in and Blade and Jay do a reverse-off. And then they start doing double-team reverse-offs, ending in two double clotheslines with all four teams down. And it's funny, you can just tell they're, like, how they build to just getting a crowd applause with stuff like that. Blade and Jay single out, and they transition a pinfall-off. And then Dude just pulls Blade to the outside and starts, like, beating him up. And I was like, why is the Dude allowed to hit Rick Blade at all? Like, why does he look strong against Rick Blade? It sort of looks dumb.
Yeah.
And Ruckus sort of jumps him and punches him out. But I'm sort of like, it doesn't make sense at all.
No, yeah, it's strange.
This opens up to an assisted slingshot from the Briscoes. And then a big crossbody from Jay to the outside to both. And then outside, Jay just sets up a two-chair table and just suplexes Blade on it cold. And it's almost like the camera missed it because Mark and Ruckus are wrestling inside. But I was like, that's a brutal spot to take for no reason.
The fans. It's for the fans.
Yeah, it's just for the fans that have given up their chairs for this.
Exactly.
Ruckus makes his own comeback with a triple handspring elbow. And then he goes for another triple handspring elbow. And I'm just wondering, like, how much energy does a handspring take? Because he does like six
effortless
of them in no time. And then Mark Briscoe tries to make his own, but he just does like a cartwheel back elbow.
For me and you, I think it would take all our energy. But for Ruckus, it's 0.1%. He's effortless with it.
He is the man.
Yeah.
I do like that Mark would like, because he's mocking him, he does like a cartwheel elbow, almost like a fuck you. I can turn around too. That was pretty cool. Then Jay Briscoe and Rick Blade take over. Mark goes to save it, but Ruckus catches him, and they hit stereo Samoan drops and moonsaults. That's Rick Blade and Ruckus. The Briscoes attempt a concerto where they're trying to hit both the babyfaces with chairs, but the babyfaces duck, and then they both hit double spinning kicks to the chairs, which I thought was actually
concerto. Was that from AEW calling it the concerto?
No, it's Edge and Christian.
Right, okay.
Which is, yeah, right around this time they would have coined it.
Was it after this?
No. Edge and Christian definitely coined the concerto.
Before they did this hit, and maybe they've copied them again.
Well, no, because the commentator said concerto.
Maybe he just invented it.
You're saying Hitman John House?
I'm saying Edge and Christian ripped off CZW.
The Briscoes.
Yeah.
What a match that would have been, by the way.
Yeah,
Briscoes versus Edge and Christian.
Peak Edge and Christian. Yeah, yeah. I would like to see Ruckus and Rick Blade against Edge and Christian.
So they wrestle towards the bar top, and Rick Blade and Ruckus just hop up on the bar top and then do double moonsaults, and the fans just fucking start chanting CZW. It was pretty cool. So whenever you see guys flip off something they're not meant to be on, I'm into it, you know.
And by flip off, you mean the, like, gymnastics move, not...
Yeah, not like middle
Yeah.
Although I am also into
it. Yeah, that does rule as well.
Back in the ring, Ruckus hits this gorilla press and then standing moonsault on one of the Briscoes. But then the other Briscoe comes back and lariats him and hits a moonsault of his own. Blade and Jay are back in the ring, and Ruckus smokes Mark's head with a chair outside. It's one of those, like... Just the camera goes to the outside for half a second, and all you see is just Ruckus smoke Mark with a chair.
Yeah.
And then it goes back.
Yeah, it's like a comedy cutaway from Family Guy.
Exactly. And then Rick Blade hits a triple fisherman buster, the last one being a brain buster for a two count. And the faces, at one point, they just hit double face busters in the ring, and both of them pin both Briscoes at 9 minutes and 50 seconds. The commentators call this a major upset, which I don't know if it was.
I don't.
The Briscoes are sort of losers.
Yeah, in this.
Right now.
Yeah, yeah. Just to clarify. Yeah, no, I don't know if it was a major. I would have put my money on Rick Blade and Ruckus winning.
Yeah, Rick Blade's like one of the bigger stars in the company.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah.
Also, let's not forget they're still only like 18. They're beating up kids.
Yeah. Yeah, these are
maybe my major upset. They were like, "This is so upsetting to watch two kids get to watch two adults beat up these children."
Yeah, these people who aren't allowed wrestle legally.
Yeah,
in all the states.
This is a majorly upsetting thing I'm watching in front of me.
And so the Briscoes, like, they get up and they shake hands with Rick Blade and Ruckus, and the dude gets all mad and like pushes the Briscoes away. He's like, "You don't shake their hands."
I'm with him. I'm not.
You think so?
Yeah, I'm with it. No, absolutely not. I remember, fuck him. I mean, I'm a United fan, and they were Roy Keane or something was talking about like, I don't want to see players swapping shirts with them. What's all that bullshit? Yeah, I don't want to see them shaking hands.
There's a level, I don't know. Like in UFC, guys will like one guy will tag a guy with a jab, and then they'll like fist bump or be like, and I hate that because it's like, yeah, you're fighting.
Yeah.
Like after the fight, you can hug the guy. I don't know.
But that's pretty gay.
That's funny. What would Rock and Rumble
have to say? Yeah. What would? he falls through the roof and he's like, "I agree. Do not touch him."
Yeah. You're right. It is gay.
Yeah.
You know, the male camaraderie.
Yeah, that's true. And you know, I'm only joking about that. You know, it's fine. But no, I agree. Like in wrestling, it's better. No shaking hands. None of this respect bullshit.
But it feels like they're gonna babyface turn the Briscoes. Like that's where they're heading here. Because yeah,
they'll probably leave Dewey. I imagine.
That's what I think too. Well, because we get our hard cut, and then Dewey is back out again here with Nick Gage and Nate Hatred. And I thought they looked badass. I don't know. The camera was close up on them, and they looked cool.
Yeah, first time you say that about Nate Hatred.
Yeah, I just think, I don't know. This is a good tag team. They sort of work well together.
Yeah, definitely. They've come a long way in the past three episodes we've watched of them together. But yeah, you know, I think Nate Hatred, his hair's a bit... I think when you've got that makeup look, it helps when your hair's a bit sweaty and kind of covering a bit your face. You look a bit murky.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I mean, I was excited for this match. I was actually very excited.
Me too. This is the one they set up at the very beginning of the show. So it's Nick Gage and Nate Hatred with Justice Payne and the Wife Beater. And they're introduced as the Hate Club. And they both come out just fucking jacked and oily and shirtless. And I was like, these guys rule.
Yeah, it goes without saying, Wife Beater looks better with her shirt off. And also, yeah, Justice Payne is looking great. Like
this is an awesome tag team.
Yeah, he is looking ripped, sexy, big, oily boy. Mm-hmm. I also really enjoyed hearing a room full of presumably white middle-aged men just chanting Hate Club, Hate Club, and just being like, please change the name because this is sort of uncomfortable. And
well, no, they stop Hate Club for a minute and then start chanting Wife Beater.
Yeah, it's incredible. It's so good. Like, it's just absolutely wild. They're just like, yeah, Hate Club. Hey, and I'm like, no.
I love just being like the fly on the wall, like trying to explain the context. Like, no, his name is Wife Beater.
Yeah.
And he's in the
Hate Club. Yeah. And he's like, what, would you rather be him in the Love Club? That's a bit problematic.
That is gay. Well, I'm sorry. I'll stop saying that.
No, it's fine. It's just that he's called Wife, but it's not. It's the opposite, if anything.
Right. Yeah. Well, you love her so much that you got to beat her.
Yeah. Let's stop now. I do like to imagine that there's just a family in there. They're just their annual going out to, you know, Froggy's Bar and Grill. And the wait staff are just like, I hope you don't mind. There's a wrestling show in the other room. Like, I hope it's okay. And he's like, no, that's fine. Yeah,
The worst thing a comedian can ever do is just spring a show on unsuspecting people.
Yeah, just eating your burger and you just hear, Hate Club. Like, from the sink. Like,
that
insane.
Is what Zandig would do, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, we start this match for the CZW Tag Team Championship. Nick Gage and Nate Hatred with Justice Payne and Wife Beater. So Justice Payne and Gage start with this insane pace, and you can tell these guys have just worked together. You can tell they're brothers when they wrestle. I don't know what it is about them. And Justice Payne, again, just beating the shit out of Nick Gage.
Yeah.
Like, laying in potatoes, like, fucking just nailing him. And then Nate Hatred gets tagged in. They hit a double brainbuster on Justice Payne. Hatred takes over with his classic shitty power moves. You got a power slam here. You got a bulldog here. And then Justice Payne hits a Fisherman Buster, tags in the Wife Beater, and he just starts running wild. He hits a, it's so funny. Like, he does the spot where he Irish whips the guy and then does a leapfrog over him, and he so barely clears Nate Hatred.
Yeah.
It's like, you could have just got sacked by the guy's head. Then he hits a power slam on Nate Hatred. They all start brawling outside the ring. They just start suplexing each other onto chairs. Nate Hatred gets thrown into the sea of chairs. It's almost like you can't even really keep track of it because it's really dark.
Very chaotic.
Good match, though, so far.
Yeah.
I was really into it at this point. Nate Hatred and Whitebeater get back in the ring. They start having a chop-off before Nate hits another shitty bulldog. And then out of nowhere, Nate Hatred picks up a flower pot. Like, exactly what you're thinking when I say that. Like, a big brown flower pot. And puts it on Whitebeater's head. And he drops a leg drop on it. And it doesn't break. And then he just smashes it with a chair, and it shatters, and the whole crowd fucking freaks out. They're like,
yeah.
Holy shit.
It's crazy. I don't think that was part of the show. I think that belonged to Froggies, and I don't know if we'll see them back here.
Do you think that would hurt?
Having a flower pot smashed on your head.
Well, because the flower pot's, like, it's big enough that it's not touching his head. So it's basically like the flower pot's, like, breaking around your head.
I think it would still hurt a bit, yeah. I don't think it would be painless.
Yeah, fair. I love this spot. I thought it was I thought it was great. So Justice Payne comes in like a house of fire. He hits a blockbuster on Nate Hatred. He hits a big suplex to Nick Gage. Then Gage, out of nowhere, picks up Justice Payne in a Goldberg like gorilla press, and then drops him and catches him into a fallaway slam. And I was like, go on, Nick Gage.
How's he doing this?
This looked awesome. And then right after that, Whitebeater hits a Chokenstein on Nick Gage, followed by a Justice Payne Lion Salt. And then the referee counts two. They break the count. And this is super weird. So it feels like Zandig's about to interfere, but the referee just stops counting. And then Whitebeater, like, starts yelling at him. And then that's when Zandig appears. And I'm pretty sure he was, like, 10, 15 seconds too late because the wrestlers are clearly, like, pissed and don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And the referee's sort of trying to save it. So, yeah, Zandig, like, saunters out to distract, and then Zabar throws powder into Justice Payne's face. And then Justice Payne, with powder all over his eyes, accidentally hits the Pain Thriller on Whitebeater, which allows the Frog Splash for Nick Gage to win this match at 8 minutes and 25 seconds.
New champs, new champs, new champs.
And new tag team champions. So, yeah, they did the screwjob finish, and it's sort of like it was almost too choreographed because they kept saying all night that there's problems between Whitebeater and Justice Payne, but they've never really set that up on a show before. So it's almost like they said it was going to happen, and then it happened.
I think they just wanted the tag team titles off them, too, because I think they want to be solo wrestlers or whatever, because they keep talking about, well, like, the Hate Club, like, is there problems there? Is, you know, like you were saying, between them two. So I presume...
Well, they're so over the Hate Club. Like, there's how many guys were there at the beginning, and now there's
200.
And now there's just like Justice Payne and Whitebeater.
Yeah, they've got a lot of love though. A lot of people in the crowd love being part of a club about hate. So, I presume like Japan and stuff, they were just like, yeah, it was because they defended it what a couple of times, if that, like maybe once, and then now they've lost it. Like, you know, they've got all the stuff going on. So I think it made sense to do a title switch.
I agree totally. Yeah. And sort of Nick Gage and Nate Hatred, like Nate Hatred is best hidden in a tag team, so this sort of is good.
Yeah, you know, see Gage do some more stuff. So yeah, I thought it was okay. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I'm glad the titles have swapped over because I do think the tag team division of CZW is stronger.
Yeah,
than just the singles. So.
Well, and they have the built-in storyline with the Briscoes, like that's a match they can go to, and yeah, even John Dahmer and Eddie Valentine. Might
count. Hell yeah, my favorite.
Can't wait to watch that open a show. Yeah. And then we get our, so right before they cut, by the way, Zandig is just in the ring with a microphone, and then they cut, and then they come back, and Zandig's just still in the ring with a microphone. And did you realize he was balding before this show?
He's got a lot of testosterone, so that makes sense.
He's got hair down to his shoulders, but the top of his head is just completely balding.
So yeah.
That's the only thing he has in common with Paul Heyman.
Yeah. I mean, they know, you know, Heyman wasn't running an active wrestling thing at this point. So, you know, Zandig's got one there. It's mad to think.
Point one Zandig.
Yeah, it is mad to think that Zandig won. like it's great. Like, when he was calling them out and you're like, yeah, you're not bigger than ECW and all this sort of stuff. And then you're like, well, he won though, didn't he, really?
Just by existing?
Yeah, just by still existing. Like, he outlasted them, he kept going. Like, it's insane to think about.
Well, so his opening line here, I wrote this down because it's so funny. So, you people want to see the most hardcore match in the history of wrestling?
Yeah.
And that's what he's promising here.
And I'm like, yeah, where can I? What? Tell me where I can watch it.
Japan?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Zandig, he just starts shit-talking the fans as they're chanting, fuck you, Zandig. And he's like, hey, bring out the barbed wire, to no one in particular. He's just yelling at the back. And then he says, this ain't bullshit barbed wire like Sandman used down in Atlanta. And I was personally offended. You can't fucking throw shade on the Sandman when he's not even in the building.
Was Tommy Dreamer out at this point, though?
No.
Like, was he wasn't outside. No, right. I didn't know if he was just shouting it at him or just generally.
No, he's shouting at his production crew.
Yeah. Because
when the match starts, they're still setting up barbed wire in the corner.
Yeah.
Zandig tries to Irish whip Tommy Dreamer in the corner, but there's a guy there, like, barbed wire.
I mean, if you got civilians involved, that would be the most hardcore match. Like, can you imagine Hell in a Cell 98, but there's just a dude in the cell as well? How much more hardcore would that be?
That is true.
There's just a member of the public just like, what am I supposed to, like, what on earth is going on?
Yeah, if Mick Foley went off with just some guy.
Yeah, yeah, he did. Yeah, just him and the guy, like, in the other guys when Samuel Jackson and Thingy jump off the roof. He's just like, you've got to believe me, bro. We've got to do this.
So that's the match we get. And I feel like they promised it last week, but we got it this week. So it's Zandig versus Tommy Dreamer. And Dreamer just rushes the ring from behind. He starts brawling with Zandig. He hits a neck breaker, tosses him over the top rope, over the bar. And then, not Zabar, he throws him over a bar. And then I heard it from the commentator first, but he's like, Zandig's busted open already.
Immediately, yeah. It's so
like,
funny.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
He had no head trauma at all.
Yeah.
No weapons were used. He's just like, I got a blade, bro.
Yeah, he's just blading straight. He just does that at home as well. He's just bleeding.
Yeah.
He's just like, always.
Man, it's Saturday.
God, CZ fucking W just in his pajamas. But also, like, note of here is Zandig's birthday, as they're telling us.
Don't spoil the lead here.
Oh, okay.
We get an announcement later. So they're brawling around the bar. Zandig hits a snap suplex on Tommy Dreamer just in this bar. And then Dreamer starts smashing Zandig's head on the bar table. He throws him outside. And I'm like, oh, someone's car is getting fucked up here in Froggies. But they don't really do much outside, actually. Zandig brings Dreamer back inside. He posts him on a pole. Crotch first, and that's when he yells, CZ fucking W. Yeah, they wrestle back inside. Dreamer puts Zandig's arm in a chair and then around the post. And this is the most, like, so Tommy Dreamer apparently, like, you know, he's a wrestler's wrestler. Like, he doesn't agree with Glass at all. There's a comedian, Zach Amico, who's got this great story, who he did a death match once just with some guy who, like, hit him with light tubes and stuff. And when he met Tommy Dreamer, he told Tommy Dreamer, like, you know, I did a death match, and this was great. And Tommy Dreamer's like, only fucking idiots use glass. That's fucking dumb of you. And, like, just dressed him down for doing that. And Tommy Dreamer is a wrestler's wrestler. So this spot is sort of like he puts Zandig's arm in a chair and then wraps it around the post and then hits the post on the chair with a chair shot. And you can tell, it wouldn't hurt Zandig at all.
Yeah.
But just how it looks and the impact, the fans go crazy. And I'm sort of like, all right, Tommy Dreamer, like, you're a wrestler.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Whereas CZW guys are like, no, it has to be as devastating as possible.
Yeah, I'm kind of with the CZW wrestlers and that. Use glass all the time.
I agree totally. Tommy Dreamer is a bitch.
He's the wrestler's bitch.
So Tommy Dreamer hits his arm twice with the chair and the commentator's like, how's he going to sign our paychecks? And that was a great line. And then Zabar, out of nowhere, cuts off Tommy Dreamer. He gets in the ring. He gives Zandig the advantage. Zandig just clotheslines the fuck out of Tommy Dreamer for a two count. And then Zandig motions to the barbed wire that they have, and he starts twirling it off. And Dreamer just reverses Zandig, puts him in the trio, sets up the chair in his face, and then does his patented Tree of Woe dropkick. And it always sounds awesome. Dreamer just gets the right elevation and just fucking hits the chair.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it hits the guy in the face, but it just looks and sounds great. And then he picks Sandigup, DDTs him on the chair. And then out of nowhere, this is maybe the biggest surprise I've had since watching CZW on this podcast. Jun Kasai enters.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And attacks Tommy Dreamer with a DDT. So we'll do a side profile quick on the crazy monkey, Jun Kasai. Debuted for Big Japan Wrestling just 3 years early in 1998. Was part of CZW a few years later. He's a deathmatch phenom who's won multiple deathmatch tournaments, including Tournament of Death, over 20 years later than this. And he's won also deathmatch tournaments in America, Japan, all over the place. He still goes today, even debuting in New Japan in 2023, teaming with Jon Moxley and Homicide. This guy is he is a legend. And I was like, I had no idea that he was like wrestling this early.
Yeah, crazy. That's insane. I mean, I am excited to see this sort of stuff where just like, you're like, oh, that guy.
Yeah, Jun Kasai, dude.
Yeah.
He's so awesome.
He just comes out of nowhere as well. Like, it is crazy.
And
just
you can tell he's just willing. He's like full Darby Allin mode. He's just willing to throw his body into violence. I love Jun Kasai. He high-fives the big deals, of course, Zabara and Zandig.
I forgot all about that nickname.
Yeah, it's the worst faction name ever. This allows Zandig to hit a Falcon Arrow on Tommy Dreamer. And then Kasai and Zandig bring in the table. They get Dreamer on it. And Kasai, he does his patented. He always puts on these, like, aviation goggles and then salutes. He does this thing, which I didn't realize. Again, I didn't realize he was wrestling at this point. But he does that. Hits this huge splash on Dreamer, but the table doesn't break. Which, it looks like it hurts so much worse when the table doesn't break.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's the point, right? Like, the impact will be taken by the table when it breaks, so it doesn't hurt as much. But, like, when it doesn't break, that's just your body fucking you up.
They just bounce against each other and fall over. So they set it up in the corner and throw Dreamer through the table and it breaks. And then out of nowhere, Justice Payne and Wife Beater hit the ring and they're both carrying, like, as many light tubes as you can hold in each hand together. Like, they each have, like, five light tubes in each hand. And they just start destroying Zandig and Kasai with light tubes.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess Tommy Dreamer doesn't like glass, so he probably wouldn't.
He left. He just left the ring and starts watching. And the commentators are even like, well, Tommy Dreamer's enjoying watching this.
Yeah, he just goes, yeah. And I mean, I think this is cool. I like this because it feels like this is the closest they've ever gotten. And it's not to say they're even close, but like Attitude Era, just like not really, like just pitch perfect, like nonsense, really. Of just like this whole thing is breaking apart. We're just like, what on earth is going on?
Yeah.
Like the right sort of blurring between sort of, you know, reality and wrestling where you're like, are they pissed off? Like, they're just coming out, they're ruining the match, they're just, like, appear to be murdering Zandig. Like, this
within minutes, the ring is covered in glass.
Yeah.
Like, they just, and they're doing, like, baseball swings. Like, as hard as you can hit a light tube against someone's head, they're just doing it. Not even from, like, the front, like, the top of the head, they're hitting them in, like, the side of the face.
Yeah, and I don't know if Tommy Dreamer did know. I mean, because he says stuff at the end, but I don't know if he did know that this was going to happen.
I think he was just like, I'm not taking part in this.
Yeah, it's because it is just
he doesn't use a light tube either. Like, he would much prefer a Singapore cane, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know if they can get one of them.
So yeah, the ring is just a mess. They wrap Zandig in barbed wire, like Sandman style, where he's like, literally like
a dog. Not like Sandman style. He already specified.
Hey,
it's not that bullshit fake barbed wire.
It's still real to me, damn it. Yeah, so they wrap him up, and Zandig's just covered in barbed wire. Justice Payne just grabs a microphone as Wife Beater is just fucking up Zandig, and he's like, first things first, the Hate Club is back. Huge ovation.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true. I'm still think they're setting up to break it. I don't know, maybe they're not, but it just seems weird for them to then have dropped their titles, I guess. But
it
very strange. But yeah, then the crowd obviously rapturously chanting Hate Club.
Yeah, it felt better hearing a Hate Club chant without Rockin' Rebel on the show.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, the Hate Club. He leads Hate Club marches, not chants.
And then he says, "Second thing, second. Guess who runs this company, you bitch." And then he hits Zandig with another light tube to sort of like end this segment off.
And it Paul Heyman walks. No, he just yeah.
And then Rob Van Dam.
Yeah. No, it's not my signature. Uh-huh. It's Paul Heyman's signature.
So Tommy Dreamer gets a microphone, and just in full endorsement mode, he's like, I've seen a lot of sick shit, but this blows ECW out the door. And everyone starts chanting ECW.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is hilarious. And then he's like, and this is Zandig's birthday.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This is what he's deciding to do.
Yeah, Tommy Dreamer, like, obviously he's got his problems and things like that, but he is funny. Like, he is good on the mic.
Dude, he's just, like, fully... It's like... he's not taking it seriously. Like, he's treating it like a house show where...
Yeah.
At the end of a house show, the baby faces are always like, thanks for coming out, everybody. This has been great. Whereas Zandig, this is, like, a very serious event to him. And it's just so funny watching him, like, wishing him happy birthday. And he's like, Froggy's Bar and Grill, thank you for having me.
Yeah, that's, it is great. The Froggy's Bar and Grill got some great shout-outs this episode, for sure. Just, like, a night of retribution at Froggy's Bar and Grill.
From Tommy Dreamer.
Froggy's Bar. It's just so fucking funny that it's called Froggy's Bar and Grill, and they keep, like, referencing it.
Yeah, it was awesome. And then the camera just pans to Jun Kasai for a second, and his back is just fucking covered in blood.
Yeah.
Like, I think he must have... Because they put a bunch of the tubes down and just back suplexed him on them.
Yeah, I mean, Zandig also was just like, there is barbed wire, like, hanging out of his head. Like, he looks fucked.
Both of them look just
fucked.
And so the fans start singing happy birthday to Zandig as he grabs a mic, despite being wrapped in barbed wire, and he challenges... Justice Payne, Wife Beater, and Tommy Dreamer to a six-man tag in 3 days with him, Jun Kasai, and I believe Trent Acid.
That match is... I am very excited for that match.
Well, and as he's saying this, the camera goes to Jun Kasai, and he's puking in the ring. Did you catch this?
No, I didn't see him puking, but that rules.
He was throwing... He's just vomiting.
Yeah, this is awesome. This is the best end to a show.
So that is the end of the show. Only an hour and 36 minutes, which I loved.
Well, also, about 5 of those minutes of them just, I guess, replaying the best bits of when they beat up Zandig.
Oh, yeah.
Because it just kind of weirdly cuts back. Yeah, it's very strange. I'm like, whoa, production value.
Not,
yeah.
Not like slow motion or close-ups.
No, it's just
the same footage.
Yeah, it looks like it looks like an editing error because it just kind of loops back into it. So, yeah. I mean, yeah, a nice taut 1 hour 30.
What did you think of the show? What do you rate it?
I thought it was good. I liked it. Yeah, I thought it felt like one of the more cohesive, like, there wasn't too much bullshit. Like, there wasn't any messing about. There was just, you know, and this is what we were saying about shorter episodes, is that, yeah, it is more concise. The matches, I don't think any of them went over 10 minutes.
No, I don't think so.
So, yeah, the wrestling was, you know, hit and miss as it is. But, yeah, I think it was like a decent show.
Yeah.
Like and which is like incredible. Like in a good way. I was just like, "Oh, okay, this is just like it feels like it's finding its footing and can just produce there's a baseline level we're getting out of CZW now where it's not just dog shit."
The first words I have written here, it was so inoffensive.
But in a good way, because we've said that before and hated it, but I think there was still good wrestling in this.
Yeah, definitely. It was just a fun short show. I have written here, I always do my final soliloquy. It's a fun short show. It's nothing special, but nothing too bad. Star power at the top. No rockin' rebel.
Yeah.
I give this 2.25 out of 7.
Yeah, I was thinking 2.5.
Mm.
Yeah, just because, like...
I could have used, like, a really good match or a really violent match, but...
That last match was pretty violent, bro. That's some of the sickest shit Tommy Dreamer's ever seen.
Yeah. Sicker than anything ECW has ever done.
Yeah, exactly. You just want your fake bullshit Sandman stuff, mate. This is real.
Dude, let's not start that. I hated that line. But anyway, this has been Comics in the Combat Zone. Thank you for listening, everybody. If you want to follow me on Instagram, I'm at FunnyJordanD.
I'm at Pink Hoverboard.
And keep it tuned to the wrestling brain. We'll catch you next week.